go. Here we go.
Sisters, siblings, welcome to Penn Sunday School, starring Penn Jillette. My name is Mike Ledoux. Penn, Reddy, Rich, and I are broadcasting from the show creator's studio south. On this week's Chitter Chat, we'll talk about the highlights of Goudeau's trip to North Dakota. We'll try not to grouse too much about COVID or vaccines, and maybe we'll read a little viewer mail. Here he is, preaching love, Mr. Penn Jillette.
Another good job, Goudeau.
Thank you.
You are right in the pocket.
Yeah.
We should do like another 10 or 15 yeah. intros.
10 years in and we're set.
Got it going. So North Dakota, where were you playing in North Dakota?
I don't know the name of the town. Jesus.
But was it a casino?
Yes. Yes. It was the Prairie Knights Casino.
How big a casino is it?
Because,
you know, the one in Oklahoma that's in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
Is gigantic.
Yeah, it's pretty big. It's a pretty big spot. And in spite of being what seems to me a long way from anything, you know what I mean? I think their directions say, you know, 30 miles south of this town you never heard of and 50 miles north of this town you've never heard of. In spite of that, there were 2,000 people there to see a show.
2,000 people.
Yes.
See the Lance Burton show.
All to see the Lance Burton show in the middle of nowhere. We were their first show back, and it felt great to be doing a show.
They were all masked?
No, at that point they weren't. This was a couple weeks ago before things sort of fell back into hell.
And how many shows you do?
Just one.
One show?
One show.
And how long did it take to drive there?
Well, it's a long, complicated story.
Well, let's hear the long, complicated story.
Lance has decided to buy a tour bus.
Lance is a tour bus.
Lance bought a tour bus.
But Lance isn't touring.
I think Lance wants to tour a little more. I feel that this is an indication.
Okay.
I presume he didn't want just a bus in his backyard, but maybe. You know, a lot of people in Kentucky have a lot of abandoned vehicles in their yard. Maybe he thought a bus was the coolest. So I think he went to Nashville and found himself a nice tour bus.
This
and
is a
country Greyhound, music, giant silver.
Country music tour
yeah,
bus?
Big,
I mean, like country music artists toured in this?
Yeah,
like,
it's that sort of thing, a big giant silver.
Is it all decked out like that?
No, it's decked out like an old couple's camper on the inside.
I see. Because I went and saw, what's his name? Trace Adkins.
Yeah.
Tour bus that he when he was here mm-hmm. that had like, you know, it was like this really classy, like, I mean, not my kind of classy.
gold toilet seat classy.
Yeah, that kind of shitty classy, you know.
Classy with a K.
Classy with a K. You know, he had like, you know, leather couches
uh-huh.
where he could watch his big TV
right.
sports on his big TV with uh-huh. a leather couch and, you know, cigarettes.
And I think that's, you're talking kind of what Lance is like. It has a bedroom in the back and a shower and some closets and a little washer and dryer. And
how many of you were in it?
Eight. Eight of us in it.
One bedroom?
One bedroom.
Okay.
Two beds in it.
I've seen this on porn thing.
Yeah. That's how we got us all to agree to it. I mean, what are you talking about?
Now, Mike Nesmith, you know, when the monkeys went out, because Mike Nesmith is more wealthy than a lot of the people that would work in the
on
band.
Than everyone else on Earth.
When he went on tour with the monkeys, this is many years back, he rented, you know, like one of those really fancy tour buses.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the band, Mickey and Peter... not Davey. I think Davey was dead then.
Oh.
Mickey and Peter mm-hmm. and the band
mm-hmm.
were on one bus. And then Mike Nesmith was on another bus that had like an espresso machine.
Yeah.
And he was touring very, very comfortably. He said that the bus was a more luxurious way to travel than private planes.
I think that that's true. Have you ever done a bus and truck tour?
I've never done a, I've been on a bus.
Right.
But it's been like a regular like, yeah, well, transport these bus.
Lance is having the inside redone so that it has bunks in it, so that we'll all have a private spot to sleep.
You're back in the circus.
Yeah. And in fact, I cannot tell you how happy I am about that. I slept really well in the circus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had my own three.
Does Lance have a driver?
Not yet.
But he's going to get a driver.
The plan is to get a driver. Right now it's us,
which is illegal.
I have no idea if that's
illegal. Of course it's illegal. You can't drive a bus.
I can drive a camper.
The bus is bigger than a camper.
It's a little bigger than a camper.
You can't drive a bus without a license.
Well, I can. Maybe can is the word that we should be working on.
You shouldn't drive a bus without a
bus. That's correct. That I will absolutely agree with. And I had my first driving bus lesson at 4 a.m. till 8:15 a.m. When everybody else went, oh, kind of too tired. Can you drive? And I went, oh, yeah, I'm pretty awake. I'll drive.
Who taught you?
Just one of our crew guys said, "Let me, you know, here's how you do this. Here's how you do that."
Well, tell us some of the stuff.
Well, it's just there are many more buttons than you would think on a bus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a button to open the door. There's a button to put a little platform under the feet of the person sitting in the passenger side. And there's buttons to level the bus and to shift the bus. Doesn't have a shifter. It's got buttons. And there are lights and lots of...
Oh, it's not automatic?
It isn't automatic, but it's not on the dash or anything like you're used to seeing. And so there are three or four buttons that I have to push before the bus will start.
How fast does bus go?
Bus goes regular speed, highway speeds.
So you're driving a full-size bus.
Yeah.
You a monkey.
65 miles an hour.
A monkey is
on
putting
a two-line road.
Tons of
at metal. 4 a.m. I believe you have a clear grasp of the situation.
And people are sleeping in the back.
Yeah.
As
best they can, because I don't know about them, but when I was sleeping when the other people were driving, it wasn't that restful. You know, yeah, every time you hear that kind of that rumble strip, you think, this is it.
Do you have TV on?
Oh, God, we're going.
TV's on?
No, TV is not on the first trip. The TV was on the second trip. The first trip was, like I said, all night. We got on the bus at 9 o'clock at night and got off at 9 a.m. at the Prairie Nights Casino.
And then did you have rooms there?
And we went into the hotel and had our rooms and slept for the day. And
it was the nearest airport's not 11 hours.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the nearest airport is, but we decided we would all fly to Des Moines and get on the bus.
How'd the bus get to Des Moines?
I think the bus is in Des Moines. One of our acts, Keith West, lives in Des Moines.
Ah.
And so Keith is, I believe, in charge of having a wrap put on the bus, which hasn't been done yet that I know of. And they're doing it now. They hadn't had it done before that time.
It'll say Lance Burton.
It'll say, I don't know what it'll say. I don't think he wants it to say Lance Burton, but it might be Purple Bus of Mystery.
Bus sure sounds like it needs a wrap.
It needs a wrap. It's going to be cool.
Well, you know.
And it's going to put... He's going to put bunks in it. We're all going to have our own sleeping places. And
the best tour bus in the 70s was owned by Frank Zappa. And it was called Fido with a PH, Fido, mm-hmm. PHYDO, mm-hmm. Fido. Maybe it was PHYDEAU, like mm-hmm. Godot,
right.
Fido.
Fido.
And Zappa owned it. Mm-hmm. And Zappa made money renting it out. And if you look at Rolling Thunder, the Bob Dylan tour, he's on Fido.
Wow.
And supposedly it was, at the time, state-of-the-art comfortable.
Well, maybe that's what we should be shooting for. Maybe we'll rent it in the off times. It should be an Airbnb in Lance's yard.
You know, that was the funny thing. We had an 18-wheeler.
Yeah.
Right? And a big trailer for the 18-wheeler when our props would go. And it was really funny because other shows... You know, David Copperfield mm-hmm. has an 18-wheeler, and it's just his eyes across the back.
Very mysterious.
David Copperfield. It says, not mysterious, right. It says David Copperfield.
Right.
But the big eyes looking out, and you see other shows, it had the big thing. Mm-hmm. Ours just said Roadshow.
Yeah, yours. I've seen yours. You're missing an opportunity here, my friend.
But I don't know why.
You are missing an opportunity.
Why you'd want to take a bus. Teller and I, we fly to the gig. We get to the hotel, we sleep in the hotel like human beings. What's wrong with that?
Well, I think that the type of venues that Lance is planning on are a few hundred miles apart. And so it's you know, if you had to drive to an airport and then the closest airport is still the one that you landed at for your next gig. And so if you're going to go 200 or 300 miles, this is a great way to do it, I think. Mm. And I hope that it is, and I hope we do a lot more of them. I think that would be fantastic.
Yeah, it would be.
I would love to do that. I like sleeping on a bus. I don't really particularly want to drive the bus, but it's a skill I now have.
Well, but it's not a skill you should have. It's not a skill you legally have.
I'm 9 hours into my bus training now, my friend. I think I'm giving that up? No way. I'm going to monetize it. I'm going to be between gigs. I'll be driving other people's buses. Uber bus.
Everything about this, I think I would hate.
I think you probably would. But for me, there's just I have a different set of beliefs than you on many of these things.
Yeah.
I like driving. I like seeing things. I think it's cool.
I don't want to drive. I don't want to see things. I don't want to go places.
Yeah. Okay. See, I think that's a basic difference. One of the few. One of the few things we disagree on.
You like to be outside.
I like to be outside.
I don't mind being outside in my backyard. I just want to be outside in the wilderness.
Right now, it's tough being outside here in Vegas. It is dang hot.
I'm outside all the time.
Yeah, good for you.
I go outside all the time. I love it. I just love it.
Mm-hmm.
The other day, it rained really hard.
Yeah, you know what? Remember how the last few years we have not had a monsoon season?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it's back. And it's back with a vengeance. We have had serious rains and serious
floods. I just sit out in my backyard
and
watch the
rain. It's so beautiful and delightful.
And smell it.
Yeah.
It's just great. I love it.
Perchetror?
No.
There's a name for the smell.
Petrichor.
Petrichor. That could be it.
Yeah, it's a great, great, great smell.
Love that smell.
I guess I, at some point, would like to try the bus thing. I mean, Nez made me think like it was a nice thing.
Well, let me know you need a driver. I'll be there for you, my friend.
But, you know, my family likes to take RVs. My wife loves to take RVs.
Maybe during the summer months, you and your family should get in the bus and travel the U.S. and do shows. Then that doesn't pull something from you? You don't get the, like...
Nothing.
I think that would be... Oh, that'd be kind of cool. Nothing. No? No, okay. See, I would love that. I would love to have my family go with me in the bus, and we'd travel to these shows. And
no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, okay.
No. Nope. Nope, 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 nope.
But you guys did it in what, a Datsun B210?
Well, yeah, Datsun 210 station wagon, Tell and I traveled in, and also in a van with all our props.
Yeah.
And we drive all night, and then you know, and sometimes sleep in campgrounds and stuff. We Teller and I did it rough,
yeah,
in the early days. But then we really right away went to Motel Sixes.
Uh-huh.
We did not like the camping thing. Neither one of us are camping guys.
No, that
you like KOA.
I do like camping. I'm not necessarily KOA, but KOA is okay at sometimes. KOA's a little too sophisticated for me. I'm afraid to say KOA has, you know, showers and cabins that you
just like hate taking a shower?
No, I love taking a shower, especially having had to shower for a day.
If KOA is interested in being a sponsor, we'll like them a whole lot more.
Yeah. For a while, I had a KOA card. I had a discount card for KOA.
Really?
I joined their camper club, which both start with K, along with the classy of the bus.
Yeah, I never, Teller and I thought when we first went to the Renaissance festivals that camping would be a good thing for us. It'd be good and cheap and we'd like it. Mm-hmm. And we didn't like it. I didn't like walking to the shower and
see, I really like walking to the shower. It's funny that you mentioned that specifically. I really like walking to the shower. I really, really like getting out of the shower and putting on my show costume. I think that is really funny and weird, and then going and doing shows. I just go straight from there, climb out of the shower. I'm very, very good at putting my underwear on without my wet feet touching the edges of my underwear. All very important skills when you're camping. And I like coming back at night and roasting s'mores.
None of that.
It's cool. It smells like trees.
No.
Oh, so good.
I like to go back to the Four Seasons.
I like to go back to the Four Seasons some of the time.
And go up.
I would split between the two.
And I like to check my laptop, check my mail,
mm-hmm.
read on my Kindle, take a bath, go to sleep, get up in the morning, take a shower like a human being, then go to the theater and put my wardrobe on. You know, I've been going to the theater. You'd love this. You see me to here.
Yes.
I am wearing gym shorts and slippers.
Mm-hmm.
I've been going into the show very close to in the bathrobe. Gym shorts.
I do like that.
I sometimes have a shirt that's not even buttoned.
Mm-hmm.
I've been thinking about going in with no shirt.
Yeah.
And I just drive in, go into my dressing room, and get the show costume, and then come out, and I'm never, ever wearing clothes other than the show costume.
Yeah, my wife's giving me a hard time because I wear nothing but a black T-shirt and gray sweatpants. And because it's because 2 years ago, I was wearing that, and she said, oh, you look kind of nice today. And I went, that's it. I'm doing that. I have now got all black shirts and gray sweatpants.
I don't put a shirt on.
Mm.
I have gym shorts, and that's it I wear around the house. And then when I go in the backyard to meditate, I take the gym shorts off.
Mm.
I sit and meditate in the backyard naked. I spend, and when my mother-in-law's gone, my family's gone, I spend all my time in the house naked.
My family's never gone. They're just never gone. And even if they were, I probably wouldn't be naked most of the time. I go swimming naked late at night.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, I'm happy. I'm happy. In the Four Seasons, naked is where I belong. Right now, I'm kind of semi-quarantining in my house.
Right.
Because my family have been out in the world.
Yes.
And so I don't want to test positive because our show would shut down. Yeah. Even though I'm vaccinated, wouldn't get very sick. I'm very afraid of the show.
You could pass it to one of the other people or...
Yeah, but I mean, I just legally have to shut down. So, you know, I'd have to quarantine. I can't do the show. So I don't want to test positive. So I'm now in our house, but I'm not near my family. I'm mostly outside. I'm walking around.
Right.
I'm eating separate from them. When I talk to family members, I talk outdoors at a good distance.
Mm-hmm.
We're not, you know, sometimes they're masked and they've been tested and when they're negative, we'll go back to being a normal family.
Sure.
We won't go back to being a normal family. We'll go back to being like
the Gillettes,
the Addams family.
So if you can't make the show, does Matt King get a call from Teller?
Yeah. Teller and Friends.
That'd be a good show.
It would be. It would be a very good show. Did you see the thing that was all over Twitter of the list of people not allowed in that guy's house?
No.
It's really funny. There's a list that some neighbor of somebody put up that is like, what is it, like 6 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper with handwritten... not welcome in my house, right?
Yeah.
And it includes like the Clintons and includes Snoop Dogg and it includes Donald Trump, Melania Trump, Ivanka Trump.
Right.
Ivanya Trump, whichever one it is. And, you know, like, you know, the Foo Fighters. But number one on the list.
Yeah.
The top of the list. The first name on the list, not welcome in this house. Penn Jillette.
Wow.
Spelled G-I-L-L-E-T-T-E.
Maybe there's another guy. Maybe he owns a razor company and you are just like trying to step into his spotlight.
Yeah.
Casting a little shade on this poor guy.
Teller's also on the list.
Well, maybe he's talking about a bank teller. Okay, you got me.
I couldn't find anybody to give me a source on where that title comes from, though.
What title?
It's just a list of names on the paper. There's no title on it.
Right.
Mm. Wow. And where is this house? Is it next door to you? Is there a reason you're on this list other than the obvious?
It claims to be a neighbor of somebody took a picture of it on Twitter.
Right.
But I don't know.
It's not your neighbor. Not your next door neighbor.
I just don't
know. I get it if it's your next door neighbor.
The police department referenced on there is from Utah.
Well, I'm not welcome in Utah as a rule anyway.
I bet that's wrong. But there's a good portion of Utah that would let you drive a bus through their state.
Travis Gamillion says, I might be totally off base with this, but I think that Penn and the guy should try to maintain kindness when discussing people who are unvaccinated. My wife and I are totally vaccinated and actually had COVID-19 last year. It was terrible. We know the realities of how bad this virus is and fully accept the science behind it, including wearing masks indoors, etc. We also have family who are on the opposite side, so to speak. I hate putting it that way. However, I have read and been shown evidence that in New York City, for example, some of the lowest vaccinated zip codes are those inhabited by underprivileged people and minorities. I'm still doing more research on this topic, but it makes sense to me that people of color, particularly African Americans, might be very hesitant to get this vaccine because of previous atrocities done to their people by the American government, e.g., Tuskegee syphilis experiment. I don't claim to know the answer to any of this, but I do worry about possibly excluding people who have a decent reason to be leery of the vaccine given their racial history. Anyways, don't tear me up too bad, Reddy. Of course. This is one of the things our friend Katrina,
yeah,
who is from the Netherlands. Katrina is part in San Francisco of helping people get vaccinated.
Yeah, she's a volunteer.
And one of the things they're doing is not concentrating on people who don't want the vaccine, but concentrating on people who can't get it.
Right.
Now, I don't know how you deal with the Tuskegee thing. I mean, that's just not true for this. And I don't think you can say it's okay to believe things that aren't true.
Right.
But I will say I agree completely about this.
Right.
So much has been written about the people who are Trump hesitant, which is so weird because Trump could get credit for developing
it's
the
his
vaccine.
Remember? He did it so fast and beautifully. And
tries to claim credit for it.
Yeah.
Probably deserves some. But I don't understand why his people aren't using it. It should be going the other way. I don't understand anything. But we don't in any way. We are not showing disrespect for the unvaccinated,
right,
who can't get to it. I do find it very, very difficult to be magnanimous about people who are choosing not to get vaccinated. It seems, even if you don't care about getting sick, it seems like putting everybody else in danger.
Right.
For really crazy shit that you
right.
believe.
I guess I understand not trusting the U.S. government. Mm. If I were black, I might not trust you. I don't trust the U.S. government, and I'm not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, the Tuskegee Airmen is a fine thing, you know? I mean not a fine example of ways not to trust them. And every day we hear another story about, oh, you know what? They took the subway out so it wouldn't go out to poor people's neighborhoods, so they couldn't have jobs here. They wouldn't be able to get to their job, and now, you know, fuck those guys.
Yeah.
And discovering how that's prevalent in every single aspect of our society up until now, and maybe I can see, well, I don't trust those guys this time.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it is the problem with you know, it is the boy who cried wolf.
Yeah.
You know, the government has said stuff that had been wrong so many times that it's hard to believe, you know, this stuff. And I guess there has to be some sympathy, but I do believe, I mean, with every part of me, I don't have the slightest bit of doubt in my mind. And I don't, that doesn't mean it's true, but I just don't feel any doubt about the vaccine.
No, I do not either.
None. And, you know, when it's people,
I believe you should get the vaccine. And I think this guy with these list of names, you should let Nev Campbell into your house if she shows up.
Is that one of the people on the
That's
list?
That's one of the people on the list. I'm like, what? Patricia Arquette's welcome in my house.
Why don't you go through the list and say who's welcome in your house?
This is good. We found finally something to fill the show. Beyonce. I think I would let Beyonce into my house. Uh-huh. Will Smith, the whole Smith family. They're all welcome to my house. President Biden, sure. Nicole Kidman, very cute. Nicolas Cage, Angelina Jolie, Jennifer Aniston. He just thought of every name he could. He just didn't want anybody in his house.
But remember, on that whole list, I'm the first one.
You're number one.
Yeah.
That's how I start my list. This is very similar to the one at my house. Eric Trump. So I like that we can't tell what side he's on.
Yeah, I do like that. I do like that.
He just does not want Lou Diamond Phillips at his house. And who can blame him?
I like Lou Diamond Phillips.
I'm sure Lou Diamond Phillips is wonderful, and I would love to have him at
Lou my Diamond house. Phillips is also.
I just want to say, anyone on this list, you are all welcome at my house.
He's a
tonight. Let's barbecue.
He's a fabulous cook, Lou Diamond Phillips. Well, that, really?
Well, he's the first person we invite for the barbecue. Then
he's a real. I love Lou Diamond Phillips. And Lou Diamond Phillips, the first time I met him, first time I met Lou Diamond Phillips was so funny. Remember Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles in L.A.?
Of course.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't go there now because I'm a vegan, but I used to love it.
Yeah.
Chicken and Waffles. And it was always crowded. And I went in there and he said, I just sit down, right? And Lou Diamond Phillips comes over to my table. I'd never met him before. Never met him. And he went, hi, Penn. And I went, hi. And he said, Lou Diamond Phillips. I said, nice to meet you. But I just want to tell you, Roscoe's has a policy, one celebrity at a time in the restaurant. I'm leaving now, so you're welcome here. John Lithgow's coming in at 8:30, and you'll be done by then. Is that correct? I said, yeah. He said, okay. Nice to meet you. What a great way to introduce yourself.
That's a funny guy right there.
Really funny.
Really funny. Elizabeth Banks is on here twice.
Elizabeth Banks twice?
Twice. Once in regular cursive and the next time in capital letters. She's really not welcome.
Well, she's not first.
She's not first, but she is twice. Kevin Bacon. Kevin Bacon's not allowed at this guy's house.
Kevin Bacon? Who would not want Kevin Bacon around?
Woody Harrelson is not allowed.
I can understand that.
Yeah. Let me go through and make your own. Bruce Willis. Bruce is not allowed.
Bruce is welcome in my house.
Yeah. Bruce is welcome in my house.
Who do you see on that list that would not be welcome?
You know what? There's no one. Reverend Jesse Jackson. I'm not keen on Reverend Jesse Jackson in my
house. The Trumps.
But I would allow him in.
The Trumps.
The Trumps are really not welcome at my house.
Yeah.
But I think that's... Yeah, no. I can't find anybody else.
Who's last on the list? Who's the last one the guy thought of?
Well, hold on. The last are all judges. So the last one, two, three... are judges.
Oh, I see.
So maybe that's a little personal. Maybe we can figure out who this is by the judges. Who's been convicted in these three courts?
Let's talk about MasterClass.
Yeah. We?
MasterClass, I'm going to read what they say and I'm going to insert us in here. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
With MasterClass, you can learn from the world's best minds anytime, anywhere, at your own pace. You can learn how to do magic from Penn and Teller. Improve your magic skills from Penn and Teller or Johnny Thompson.
And again, number one on the list.
With all 100 classes from a range of world-class instructors, that thing you always wanted to do is closer than you think. I'll tell you, the MasterClass people, their production is beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Their clarity is beautiful. They really do teach you stuff. You know, I went and looked at some stuff I didn't care about, like basketball. And you learn stuff, you know, stuff I'd never do, like being an astronaut. You learn stuff. It's really, really, it is one price for the whole thing. You sign up for MasterClass, you can do them forever. Ready Rich is doing them forever. What have you been doing now?
Most recently, I did St. Vincent.
And tell me about that.
She's a singer, recording artist, does a music production class.
Mm-hmm. And did you learn a lot?
First time I ever heard this thing that I've hated my entire life said in a way that I appreciated.
Oh, good. We'll get to that later. Okay, it's not part of the MasterClass thing. But how many of the classes have you done, Ready Rich?
Just shy of 25% now.
25%, which they have about 100, right?
I haven't counted.
Yeah, so you're...
They just have a meter that I watch on.
Yeah. It's not necessary to sit down and consume a full class start to finish. Sharing insights from individual lessons, what you're able to learn in 10 minutes is great, too. You can do that. You learn a lot of stuff, even if you're not learning, you're not actually wanting to do that. You learn stuff like life lessons.
I mean, how people think.
The Ron Howard directing one is great. The Steve Martin.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. Highly recommend you check it out. Get unlimited access to every MasterClass. And as a Penn Sunday School listener, you get 15% off an annual membership. Go to masterclass.com/Penn. That's masterclass.com/Penn. For 15% off the masterclass. I should point out that it's really, really nice. A lot of different topics, immersive experience. It's flexible, and there's additional resources too. Like you get
books and stuff,
books and menus and stuff like that you can print out. It's really, really good. So go to Masterclass, check that out. I'll tell you, we loved working with them. Just loved working with them, and ours turned out really good.
It is.
I mean, people seem to really love ours a lot. You all see Matt Donnelly, you see Piff the Magic Dragon, you see the wonderful Johnny Thompson that we miss so much. Let's talk about St. Vincent, shall we?
Okay.
What did St. Vincent tell you that you usually hate that she gave you different stuff in the masterclass?
This idea of avoiding music theory as a musician. Mm-hmm. Have you ever understood that?
I never have, no.
Yeah, I've never gotten it. It seems so cynical or ignorant, one or the other. And she laid that out in a way that, probably not even paraphrasing here, but it's already in your bones what you need for pop music.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need to study it at that level. You already know where you need to go for it.
Well, you know, Jonathan Rauch wrote this new book called The Congress of Ideas. You'll find it. The Constitution of Ideas, maybe. Jonathan Rauch's new book. Now, Jonathan Rauch wrote Kindly Inquisitors, which is a brilliant, brilliant book. And I also did the audio book, which you did with me, Rennie Rich. It was like kicking a dachshund uphill, wasn't it?
Both of you did.
Was that?
I said both of you did.
Both of us did what?
Old Pen and New Pen.
Oh, yes, that's right. Both of me did. Do you have the name of the new book there?
The Constitution of Knowledge, A Defense of Truth.
The Constitution of Knowledge. And the point he's making, and I haven't gotten to the whole book yet. It's a really wonderful book. We should have Jonathan Rauch on when I finish.
That'll be fun.
Jonathan's point is that you cannot do science alone. The important part of science is the agreement of the culture.
Yes.
So there is no brilliant scientific breakthrough without a culture around it. And the way we establish what's true is with the culture. And as I'm reading this, he does, you know, there's political constitution, and there's this knowledge constitution in science.
Mm-hmm.
And that what's breaking down with Twitter and the separate groups getting their own information, everybody being allowed their own opinions but not their own facts, what's breaking down in that facts there is the very constitution of knowledge. That's what's breaking down. But as I'm reading it, I become very aware that what happens in pop culture, and especially pop music, is you have to have the agreed upon sound that we want now. And I think that's a little bit of what the kind of thing the St. Vincent thing makes me think of. What you're trying to find in pop music is not some ideal from your heart, but you're trying to find what pop music wants.
Sure.
That everybody's going to agree on.
What do we like this week?
Yeah, it's this stuff. It's the thing I do not understand about fashion. How fashion, we're deciding where hemlines are going to be and where, as a culture, you know? It's just crazy. I don't get it at all. Why don't you put on what you want to put on? Well, that's not the way it works. We are social beings. We're really discovering that during the pandemic, that we really are tremendously social.
Yeah.
So maybe what St. Vincent makes me think of, and I don't want to say it's only what it makes me think of hearing it from Reddy. It's nothing to do with what she actually said. Is that what you're trying to find in pop music is you're trying to take the pop music you absorbed and trying to spew back something slightly different that happens to fit in that very narrow confines.
In today's flavor.
Yeah. Because the confines of pop music are the most restrictive of any musical form. Isn't that true, Reddy?
Are we defining pop music as popular, classical, and jazz?
No.
I mean, the distinction between those three?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say probably country dance hall is the most restrictive,
mm-hmm.
which is a form of popular music.
Yeah.
And then EDM next.
Yeah, EDM, you have no variation, right?
Yeah, it's very limited, at least structurally,
mm-hmm.
and what you could do per generation, you know, in the context that you're talking about of your time.
Very little drift.
Lord makes an argument about the difference between an audience of one, an audience of 100, and an audience of 10,000.
What are points?
Which we've talked about before in our context as magicians and DJ and that kind of thing. But speaking to 10,000 people at one time is a very different art than it is to a room of 20.
Mm-hmm. Very different.
And very few people could do it.
Yeah.
And it's really only pop music and sports that do that.
And jugglers.
10,000 people?
Yeah.
What 10,000 people have ever watched The Juggler?
I've done a few stadium shows.
Have you?
I have, with other performers.
Like what?
I did a Christmas party in Japan for a giant arena full of cellular phone employees.
Uh-huh.
And so it's, you know, it's me, it's Princess Tenko, it's Valentino. It's a funny crowd. But we're doing a show for 10,000 people with giant screens on the TV. So when I turn around and I'm doing behind the back, I can look at myself doing behind the back on a giant screen and go, wow, that's a cool trick.
We did.
But you've done that. You've done every now and then.
Well, over 13,000 people we've done. We did with George Bush, Senior, the original George Bush. He was our opening act, and we came out, and it's what I'm struck by when you're working for over 10,000 people is how lonely it is on stage.
Yes. You can't see anything.
Can't see anything, can't hear anything.
Yeah.
Because the monitors are so loud, they have to be, or you'd hear the bounce back, drive yourself crazy, you'd hear the echo. So you can't do that. So the monitors are incredibly loud. We're staging it, so Teller's pretty far away from me. The lights are so bright, you can't see anybody. And you cannot hear any individual sounds. The audience is just...
I worked one of those with you, I believe.
Where was that?
Here in town at the big UNLV Stadium. At
some rock concert or something, right?
I don't remember what it was. I think it was Toyota, maybe. Toyota Cars, maybe?
I don't know.
You and me and Kenny Raskin and Teller and Michael Motion.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that was a huge arena.
Huge.
Huge arena.
Huge. It's so weird to be that alone.
Yes.
You're much more alone on a stage like that than you are in your house.
Right.
It's just really weird. There's this real self-absorbed isolation that's unbelievable.
That vacuum of audience response is amazing.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
It's a black hole.
But on the plus side, if only a third of them like you, you're still killing. Still 4,000 people love the show.
You know, I watched the Paul McCartney, Rick Rubin thing called McCartney 321.
Yeah.
And you should really watch it, Rennie, because it is the way it's laid out is really interesting for a show. They've got a desk, you know, a mixing desk in the middle of this room. Mixing desk in the middle of a barn and a couple of speakers. And Rick Rubin pulls out the tape they put on there. I mean, the actual sticky tape you write on.
Board tape.
Board tape. He pulls out the board tape for Maxwell's Silver Hammer. And he just lays it across so that he has every track the Beatles recorded for Maxwell's Silver Hammer. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He takes out the board tape, but he has the tape already done. It's already done and laid out. He lays out the board
tape.
Like
a toilet paper gag.
So he knows. No, they're just laid out over the top of the desk.
All right.
And he just takes Maxwell's Silver Hammer and he goes, and then he pulls up track after track and says to Paul, what are you doing here?
Wow.
What is this?
I bet that's fascinating.
It's really fascinating. And he says, on Maxwell's Silver Hammer, let's listen to the tuba part. Because it's not a tuba part. It's you playing bass.
Right.
And Paul says, yeah, I got this tuba sound. He goes, how'd you do that? He goes, I don't really know. I'm playing kind of staccato, you know, boom, 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 back. So that's electric bass.
Wow.
Amazing. And then he puts up the piccolo trumpet and Penny Lane, and he puts up all this stuff. And
that was before you could actually cheat that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Paul McCartney did not know how to cheat and just hit the tuba button on his synth.
Yeah. And it's... It's really great because he also has tracks like on Maybe I'm Amazed. Mm. He goes, what's this? And he goes, and Paul goes, I think we took that out of the mix. He goes, well, what is it? He goes, I think I'm playing guitar or something. And there's some stuff where Paul goes, He goes, who's playing guitar on this? Like some of the Beatles stuff. And Paul listens and goes, a couple big mistakes there. That's me. So if that were George, it would be cleaner. No, that's me. That's terrible. And he goes, we used to think in the early days of the Beatles that the producer didn't notice a mistake. We just didn't mention it. He just got away with it. So we didn't really know it was going to go out there and be in the world forever. And it's really amazing. He sits down and plays the piano and talks about stuff. It's like, you know, it's like 6 hours. And he plays While My Guitar Gently Weeps and goes, what are you doing on bass? And it's really amazing. Paul is playing like a heavy metal Black Sabbath thing behind this like lyrical solo that Eric Clapton's doing. It's really interesting. And Paul comes off as really delightful. He comes off as humble and smart. And it really is, I was so perplexed by this because Paul still cannot read or write music. He's done symphony orchestras. And you'd think, well, you know, Paul would, wouldn't at some point you just go, I'll learn this just for fun?
You think he's still going, you know, all good boys do. There we go. Put that dot right there.
Every good boy.
No. See, that's how good I am at music.
All cows eat grass.
All cows eat grass. There it is.
It's really interesting how the Beatles found this pocket. And Paul says this really interesting thing where he says, it took me a long time to be a Beatles fan. But now I'm far enough away from it, I can go and go, yeah, I understand what that is to our culture, you know. And he also says this beautiful, I'm ruining it for everybody here. He says, he says this beautiful sentence. He says, when I was in the Beatles, I was just working with John. It was just John working with me. He said, now I look back and I go, I was working with John Lennon.
That's a nice thing.
You know, it's really interesting. And it's also, Rick Rubin reads a wonderful, wonderful quote about Paul's bass playing. And he reads it off his phone, and Paul is very touched by it. And then Rick said, do you know who said that? Paul says, no, I've never heard it before. He said, John Lennon. He said, well, John Lennon never said anything nice to me in the whole time we were together. That's pretty amazing. And it says, you know, Paul's a very underrated bass player. Just created, it goes on and on and on. And I just looked it up online, and Rick Rubin had strategically left out the middle sentence, in which John says, it's funny because Paul's an egomaniac about everything else. He's insufferable, but he's but his bass playing, he's very humble about. And it really does deal with Paul as a bass player, which I found fascinating.
Yeah.
And the kind of lines he chooses. See, that's, I've always found this fascinating about jazz and about rock. No longer true, by the way. I'm talking about rock in the 60s and 70s, but it's no longer true. Because rock music, you don't have guitars anymore, really. You're not going to have in a little while. It's all computers now. But in 60s and 70s, it was really weird because in jazz, one bass player learned to do the same job as other bass players, right? So if you were doing a session and you couldn't get, you couldn't get Ray Brown, you get another bass player, and they knew the job that the bass had, the job the drummer had, the job that the rhythm guitar player had, the job that the sax player had. Everybody knew that job. So if you go to Japan, you know, and you're a bass player, upright bass, and they're going to be playing jazz standards, you can get up on stage with your bass and you can play along with them.
Right.
And it's not that different than playing with a group in the US or in Europe. But with rock and roll, you ended up with friends who are trying to put this sound together. So Paul is not in any sense a bass player.
Right.
Paul was a guitar player. Right? With the Beatles. And then Stu Sutcliffe left the Beatles, and somebody had to play bass. Somebody had to play bass. And John and George said, I will not do it. I will not play bass. And Paul was the least headstrong, so Paul was the bass player. Now, Paul practiced lead guitar. That's what he wanted to be, lead guitar player, but he had stage fright, so he couldn't play lead guitar. He would choke. And he wanted to play rhythm guitar, but John was too strong a personality. He was going to play rhythm guitar. Sorry, that's it. I'm going to play rhythm guitar. I'm the leader of the group. So Paul is playing bass. So Paul ends up with these bass lines that are really melodic and don't do the job of the bass player.
Yeah.
The job of the bass player is being done mostly by John on rhythm guitar. You know,
yeah.
That's the Beatles sound. It's a different kind of sound. If you look at The Who, it's even more striking because Keith Moon is not doing the job of the drummer. There's no ride cymbal. There's no eighths. He is playing essentially lead guitar behind Roger Daltrey's vocals.
He's soloing the whole time.
Yeah, he's singing. But no, he's not really soloing because he's singing along with Roger Daltrey. He's always singing along every word, and he's punctuating every word that Roger does, and he's filling in behind him. So it is soloing, but it's soloing with the vocal.
Yeah, duetting.
Duetting, yeah. And then John Entwistle is doing all the harmonics, all the harmonic structure, all that, and then Pete is just kind of doing stings, you know,
right,
around it. And you could not plug Ringo's drumming into The Who. And you could not put Keith Moon into the Beatles because they're not playing the same instrument. They're just not playing the same instrument. There's all this work that has to be done to put out a pop single.
Doesn't this kind of go back to what Reddy was saying? Pop music is it's not about learning your instrument. It's about discovering what your sound is.
How you fit in.
How you react to that.
The minor differences you can do to that. And of course, that's all gone to pieces now because pop music is, with a very few exceptions, how many live instruments are being used in the top 40 right now, Reddy? Do you know?
I haven't heard the top 40 in a while, I'm sorry to say.
But when Dylan was in the top 40 albums, which he was, back a while ago, he was the only record on the charts that could be played.
Right.
The only record where the performers could actually do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that disparagingly at all, not at all, because you can very clearly, and it's very
you
clear.
You can't play Bohemian Rhapsody live.
Yeah. But Paul and Paul makes this very, very, very clear. He would have been, Paul would fit in fine now because Paul had in his head. And there is, you know, when I was talking to George Martin, yes, I was talking to George Martin. my picture walking across Abbey Road was taken by George Martin. I tried to say...
Well, that might be why you're on this list of people you can't go visit his house.
You came up with, you know, the solos and stuff. And he would say, no, Paul sang them to me.
Right.
Paul sang the
solos. We've seen the video of that.
And it's amazing when he's on For No One. It's the For No One.
Yeah.
We see Paul doing the video for George Martin going, it would go like this. And he goes... French horn.
Yeah.
He even says the words French horn.
Yeah.
He has clear in his head what he wants. It's amazing how Paul, when I'm listening to Paul talk about music or listening to Miles Davis talk about music or anybody, I realize that I am so far from a musician.
Yeah.
I work so hard to play the upright bass. I work so hard to learn the rules. I work so hard to get the technique. And I work so hard to tap into where my solos could be. And yet, I can't even see real musicians from where I am. Because they have a sense of what the culture wants to hear. What we are feeling now as a culture, what we want to hear and how that sounds and what emotions other people share. And that kind of sense of how sound affects people today.
Yeah.
Today, just in our culture, because it's not a sense of how sound affects people. You know, it's not how to do a raga with a sitar, you know, Indian music. Mm-hmm. It's not a sense of how it affects people. It's a sense of where the culture is this second. to be able to get that sound. And that's what geniuses like Beyonce, you know, and Billie Eilish, that's what they have so crystal clear, is they know what the culture of sound is now. And of course, the culture of sound is always for the top 40 children. You know, Billie Eilish is knowing what 14-year-olds want to hear in this culture right now.
Okay.
I just picked that number, 14. Sure. But I think that probably pop music is still controlled by children. And people our age don't make a dent in it.
Right. You
know, Jackson Browne comes up with a new record. He may sell to people like us a little bit.
Where does David Byrne fit in all of this?
Well, David Byrne is always...
I know he's off on his own in space somewhere.
He's off on his own in space, but he's... did you see the last tour when he was...
I didn't get to see it, and I regret that.
He's so good, but he is very well-rooted in funk music and disco and all of that. He does have a very good sense of what people want to hear. I mean, Burning Down the House was the exact right song for that time.
I mean, what he's doing now, because it's what he does now seems so different from what he did then.
Yeah, but it's still...
Maybe it isn't.
You have to always remember with David Byrne, you want to make him arty, and you want to make him really smart, but he's always got a groove. A groove like you can't believe.
Sure.
You know, he always has... You know, David Byrne is able to bring the funk. And because of the way he looks, you don't picture that, but he does.
Yes. Yeah.
And he also had to fight that.
What do you mean?
To get on the charts. It was a fight with rock radio.
Yeah.
He wasn't playing rock.
Yeah. Yeah. But they made it. But he's, you know, he's very well versed in his funkadelics parliament, all that stuff. But the Paul McCartney, Rick Rubin thing it's pretty amazing when he sits down and just rides the faders, and also when they fight over him, you know, when you bring up just the vocal and just like the vocal and drums, and you'll see Paul going, let's get some guitar in there, some.
Yeah, he knows where the mistakes are. He wants to hide it. Now turn this up a little bit so we don't hear that.
And Paul also says, which is really great, he says, on Michelle, he says, my vocal's really weak, so we overtracked it so maybe nobody would notice, but I don't sing that well.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's pretty interesting.
Sounds great. I'll have to
It's also beautifully shot. Beautifully shot. It's just, I don't know how many cameras there are. They're moving around. They built a studio on Paul's property in Jersey or something. I think he lives in Jersey. And there's, I mean, New Jersey.
Right.
And there's cameras moving around. And Rick Rubin, it's all black and white, and it's beautifully lit. And Rick Rubin is in, like, shorts, T-shirt, and barefoot, talking to Paul McCartney.
And they built a studio on his property.
Yeah.
So it's like they didn't have the budget to get him shoes. Yeah.
But it's pretty interesting to see. You know, I've always had, I really realized that I was wrong about everything about the Beatles, which is really important to me, because I had a sense of who Paul was. Mm-hmm. Who John was, who George was, and who Ringo was. And I was a John kind of guy. And if I liked an idea, that was John's idea. And then hearing him go through and going, no, I was just wrong. And those weren't the personalities. The only thing that's really true about the Beatles, and I think I believed at the time, that I still believe now, but my point of view on it is very different, is Paul says, you know, I would get ideas. I would butt in with ideas, and they'd always hate me for it. Which I think was true. I mean, Paul kept the Beatles together. Paul was the only one who really worked hard.
Yeah.
He tried. He was a hardworking overachiever. And the rest were that, but they were trying to cloak it in slackerdom, you know?
Yes.
Like not giving a fuck.
Yeah.
But Paul did give a fuck and still gives a fuck to this day.
The earliest grunge band.
Yeah. That's where they wanted to see themselves.
Yeah.
And Paul was trying hard, and he was also the most experimental. He was the most musically far out. All that psychedelic stuff I always thought was John, it's all Paul.
Right. Is there any chance that he's taking credit for it now that
No.
There's no one to say no?
There isn't, because the tapes are there.
Okay.
And you know great. Who's there doing what.
How wonderful is that?
Yeah, we have it recorded. And I think that, you know, what everybody says who works with Paul, they get a little bit annoyed only because he's that good. So I think all the stuff I've said bad about Paul in the past has been a lot. I think I was just wrong.
Yeah.
I think I was just trying so hard to make the Beatles parts of my personality that I broke down and wanted to follow.
They were yours.
Yeah.
You used to own them.
Yeah. And I don't anymore. Now they're showbiz people. Anything else there on that, Rick? Rick? I just called you Rick. Ready?
Rick.
I don't think we have time for it now, but I'd like to pin you down for a segment on Yoko.
Oh, I love Yoko. Oh, do I love Yoko. I love, love, love Yoko. And I always liked the stuff with Yoko better than I liked the stuff with Paul that John did. But we'll talk about that another time.
Yoko is not on this list. She's allowed at that guy's house.
She's allowed at that guy's house. Maybe that's Yoko's house. Maybe it's Yoko's house.
There it is. You've solved it.
That was Penn Sunday School. Cha-cha-cha. And to our listening, you become naked.
You know whose name is on this list that I'm shocked to see?
Who?
Helen. It's just as Helen. Poor Helen is not allowed in the house.
Helen is great. Who else on the list, you know?
Colin Powell is not allowed into the house.
You know, we love you.
LL Cool J, Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg.
And speaking of those people, who else do we want to thank?
Thanks a ton to the following patrons. We really appreciate it. Nicole Martin, Matthew Roush, Crazy Cat Lady Scoop, Nick Hemzing, Brian and Michelle Lattle, Music Man, Larry XGD Falcon Latouf, Jamie Thrasher, Rachel Hawkins, Mark Smith, Jake Schneider, Pete Hoke, Mark Hauser, Doug Hirschberger, Jeremy Davidson, Robin Garnett, Obi Demetrian Jr., Jeremy R. 22, Winter Riakowski, Allison Sage, Kristen Kladick, Michael Cohen, Dr. Scoop Little, Joseph Mastrangelo, Jeremiah Jenkins, Nate Soloway, Kelly Reeves, Michael Kaplan, Jesse Miller, Alexander Hoffman, Michael Howard, Danny Olwine, Julian Webb, Stephen Volcano, Jim the 21-Year Naked Magician, Scooped Mids, and Paul McBride.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.